Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to The Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and most of all, thank you for leaving us reviews on iTunes. Really is appreciated. If you want to get involved in the conversation, please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at The Rugby Dungeon, and of course, there's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the world's biggest rugby podcast now every Monday without fail. Anyway, today's guest, a little bit unusual. It's an individual that has not played rugby, or not that I know of, does not coach rugby, does not write about rugby even, but he does own a rugby team. So, without making you wait any further, this is my interview with Simon Orange. Right, well I'm here in the Mere Golf Club, in the rather salubrious surroundings, I must say, joined by Mr. Simon Orange. How are you, Simon?
I'm good, thanks, Johnny. I'm good.
So, are you a bit of a golfer yourself?
I am. I used to be a reasonably good golfer, but I'm a bit rubbish now, I'm afraid.
How is your handicap?
I'm playing off 9 these days.
Oh, nice. So, you're obviously a successful guy, but success doesn't come from just sitting around in golf clubs. So, what would your normal day be like?
Thank you.
Black coffee, please, yeah.
Well, Corpac buys successful businesses with good management teams in place.
Okay.
So, as long as we do that part right, the rest of our life is easier.
So you just mentioned Corpac there. For our listeners, what is Corpac and what's your relationship?
So Corpac's, I'm the majority shareholder in Corpac, which is basically an investment company. We buy, I think we own 23 or the majority of 23 businesses. And it's Corpac is just particularly, it's a holding company, basically. Mm-hmm. It made sense initially for us to put this in Corpac. If it's successful, Corpac will benefit. The truth of the matter is, if it's not successful, I don't want Corpac shareholders to be suffering it. I would probably take over this personally.
Ah, okay.
So if Corpac can win but not lose, and either way, sales should win, hopefully.
What was your first ever deal at Corpac? What was your first holding?
So we started in 2006 and we bought a company called Regency Glass. Very successful little glass business. We sold it recently to the one of the brothers we bought it from.
Oh, excellent.
And in fact, I'm now a shareholder with him in that business just because he didn't want to compete. He wanted to come back to the UK. He wanted to build a glass business. Didn't want to compete with us or his own family business. Neither did we want him competing, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So we just agreed a deal.
How long have you been doing this for?
So I retired initially in 2000, not with millions, but I'd had enough of work.
Sorry, you say retired,
yep.
But I'm looking at you now, full head of hair, hardly look retirement age.
That's very nice of you, thank you. No, I was pretty young to retire. So in 2000, I was 32 or 33, I think. But as I say, I wasn't retiring with a load of money, it's just because I didn't like work. Or so I thought. Mm-hmm. Within weeks, I realised retirement was not the best thing in the world to do at a young age, so I looked around and did various different things.
Did you reinvent the way that you're working?
I did, yeah, massively so. So I did some property investment, lost money there. Apparently, it turns out you need to know what you're doing, which I didn't. I started a bar and restaurant in Hale, which was the most successful bar and restaurant in Hale in terms of people going in. Still didn't make money. You need to know what you're doing there, yep. As well. But one of the other things I did was I bought an established... I keep being told off being called boring, but just a steady business. I bought it as an income, really. The bank funded 70% of it. I put the rest of the money in, and it was a great experience.
Wow. So what were you doing before the first retirement?
So I was an employee and then became a shareholder of an angel investor type business. So they would invest in people or new ideas or new businesses, mm-hmm. and help grow those businesses. And that is tough, and we did well out of it, but it's really, really tough. Even when you've got a successful business, dealing with inventors or people who haven't had experience before, and then trying to professionalise those people is tough, and that's when it goes well.
Is this like sort of a Titans Investments or a VCT type operation?
No, VCT is just a tax phrase, really. It's angel investor it's calling. So if you had if you came to me and you'd invented a new product that opened beer bottles,
yeah,
for argument's sake, and I thought it was a good idea, and you needed £500,000 to get a production facility and marketing and get it off the ground. If I thought it was a good idea, I'd put the money up, I'd take a big share of the business, and we'd succeed or fail together.
Oh, excellent. So what's your view on rugby podcasting?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, rugby as a business is struggling to wipe its feet. So I think podcasting is going to be way behind there. So I don't know if this is going to make you rich for a while, but I'm just going to change places because I don't like the sun in my eyes.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't know if you've got a day job, but I'm not sure I'll be giving that up for this.
I do. So, as an investor, then, do you have certain key things to look for when you invest your money, and more importantly, I guess, your shareholders' money?
Yeah, we look generally, and to be fair, the reason I'm here is sale. That's probably slightly different than our normal investment. But generally, we look for a solid, successful business with a good management team in place.
Yeah.
Individually, the management team is the most important aspect of what we do, because we don't want to be running these businesses. We want to invest in good management teams who run them. And usually you find if a business has been successful for 20 years, the management in place a while, and they are good and they know what they're doing. So,
I was going to say that must be very important to you, because when you've got 28 different businesses, it's very, very hard to, monitor them all.
23, unless we've just bought 5. Yes, it is, and that's why we have to buy good, successful businesses, because we can't. Mm. We can monitor. That's easy. But if we have to get involved, if they have problems and their management can't handle those problems themselves, then it becomes difficult for us. I think Corpac only employs about 15 people, and we've got, as I say, 23 businesses, about 250 million turnover. So if we had to get involved in all of them, we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So we have to choose the right businesses and the right management teams at the beginning.
Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago, rugby is struggling to wipe its feet.
Yep.
A view I think a lot of people would agree with you with. So, what made you become interested in owning a sports team?
Well, I think rugby, and perhaps people before me thought the same thing, and it hasn't worked out, so there's no guarantees that I'm right this time, but I think it's turned a corner. I think there was a new TV deal being agreed. There's more money coming into the game from the RFU and Premier Rugby and TV. And I think if you run a rugby club properly, you can definitely make it profitable,
yeah,
as well as exceptionally enjoyable. I think some of the owners have been guilty and are still being guilty of throwing money in, which very rarely lasts forever.
Yeah.
Everybody gets sick and tired of that eventually. There are other clubs that have taken on massive debt and bonds, and I think they're definitely going to come unstuck, because there's never going to be. I mean, if we get Sale to be making £1 million or £2 million a year, I think they'll have deserved a medal.
Yeah, that'd be pretty much unprecedented.
It would, yeah. Well, I mean, Exeter do pretty well now. Leicester have always made money, and I know they're different types of clubs to Sale, but I think we can build. With the way Steve runs the squad, we run a tight squad, which for various reasons we think is better,
yep,
than having 60 players, like Bristol did last year. We run a tight squad, we pay as well as everybody else, we just have fewer players,
yep,
playing for us. And if we can start winning rugby, I think that'll help us get the ground full, bring the crowds back. And if we do that, the business will be successful and self-sustaining. profitability will be a bonus. But
I mean, this is a real key thing, isn't it? Profitability. Because obviously you've got a commitment to Corpac, but if you ever spend any amount of time with Steve Diamond, if he tells you one thing, it will be sale are profitable, or they're going to be profitable.
Yes, this, yeah. If he tells you sale are profitable, then he's not telling you the truth, and he's a number of things, but I don't think he's a liar.
He's certainly not that.
No, sale lose. I think if in terms of profitability, Sale might be third or fourth in the league,
right?
Which means they lose less than most of the other teams.
Yeah.
So that is right. I think we can get Sale. Jed and I have decided we're going to invest in the team, because the secret to Sale's sustainability is filling the stadium,
yep.
Filling the crowd. We're working on buying the stadium. If we don't buy that stadium, then we're also looking at alternatives of building our own stadium, because we have to control our stadium.
Yeah.
And if we can give the fans a great experience and play winning rugby, I think we can get 10 or 12,000 people to a game, as we did at Stockport. If we can do that, we can fund a team capable of being at the top of the Premiership and of Europe, for that matter.
Excellent. So before you took control of Sale, then, what was your overall view of rugby as an industry?
Well, as an industry, I think it's struggled. I think the game appeals to a minority of people in the UK. Until I was 25 years old, I'd never watched a game of rugby. It was just a lot of men running into each other.
Yeah.
I come from a place called Withinshaw, which is a rather unsalubrious council estate south of Manchester, and you just didn't play rugby. It was a posh boy sport. About 25 years ago, Steve Smith, actually, who's a pal of mine, took me down to Sale, watched it, and explained the rules as we went. And honestly, within two or three games of understanding or having some understanding, it's the best game in the world. Oh, it's just the best game in the world. I struggled to watch football for a number of years. Now I don't watch it at all. And where you see the defenders for 10 minutes at a time passing the ball sideways to each other. Whereas in rugby, it's you're going forward or you're defending monsters going forward. It's just a fantastic sport to watch. And I think if you could somehow explain the rules to the majority of the people in the UK, it would probably be, I don't know if it's ever going to compete with football, but it would be a much more popular sport than it is, because it's just a fantastic game, isn't it?
The danger is, when you make it too simplistic, it might turn into rugby league. And rugby league is a wonderful game in its own right. I mean, it's...
Oh, no, I don't want to make it simplistic. In fact, the truth be known, scrummaging is known as the... Or is being viewed as the worst part of the game, because it slows the game down and there's not a lot of action going. And the perception is the general populace don't like it. I mean, I think possibly Premier Rugby... is wrong in that view, because it's a fantastic competition, that scrummaging. And even if you don't quite understand everything that's going on in that front row, I could sit and watch it for 15 minutes. It's brilliant. And I think a lot of rugby fans could.
Have you spoken to Rob Webber about scrummaging yet? Do it.
Oh, really?
Do it. He loves it.
Does he?
Yeah,
well, I'm not. Yeah, so he should. I think he's good at it as well. Yeah, I think it's all parts of the game, I think, is brilliant. As a business, it's still in its infancy. And it needs to become self-sustaining, but to be fair, football for years and still in some terms isn't self-sustaining. You just got a load of rich people who want to throw money at it. And I say that, Jed and I have just decided to throw money at it too, so we'll invest millions of our own money over the next few years in the hope we can get to the top, and then the crowds will come and we don't have to keep doing that. Which, to be fair, I suppose, is what everybody else thinks.
Why do you think it is, when you've got such a great product, such a great spectacle, that rugby clubs fail to make money?
Well, because it's not a sport of the people, or hasn't been historically. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I'll bet you 5% of the UK's population understand rugby, whereas 70% of them understand football.
But we do see it with football. I mean, you alluded to it before. Manchester City don't make profit.
I think they do, actually, don't they? But to be fair, Manchester City are in a transition phase, aren't they? I've been a Manchester City fan for about 40 years, and let me tell you, that's not an easy experience. But the Caldoun has come in, he's looked at investing proper money in the short term, and he really has invested proper money for a long-term benefit for the game. So I think City long-term, already they have to be self-sustaining now. They're trying to become a more established club, like United are, for instance. Yeah. United are profitable, United are self-sustaining. That's a great business model and a fantastic brand, as much as I probably would like to admit it. City will follow that, and I think possibly overtake it, because these oil guys do have quite a lot of money, don't they?
They have a bit knocking about.
Yeah.
So when you look at the football teams across the way, what lessons, if any, are you going to take from them and then apply to rugby?
Yeah, to be honest, I've not studied them enough, and I don't think I'd be able to study them enough to learn lessons. It's we've got a combination of considerable business experience from our side and considerable rugby experience, led by Steve Diamond, and he's no fool in business either. So I think between us, we can get this to be a success. But to be fair, it does all depend eventually on the crowd, because if you've got 5,000 or 6,000, which we have, you're struggling to fund a squad that can stay in the Premiership.
Yeah.
If you've got 15,000 players coming in, you've got a team competing at the top.
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now you are an owner, do you guys ever get together as an owner's group?
Yeah, there are every 6 weeks or 8 weeks, I think it is, the owners get together.
Because this is an aspect that I've never really heard about. I mean, obviously I've interviewed players, coaches, journalists, I've never interviewed an owner. So when you go to the owners' groups at work, what is usually discussed?
The sport in general, the way we can get on, the way we can improve things. The 12 owners are effectively shareholders in the same business.
Yeah.
So, but it's made up of 12 different businesses, each with their own loyalties. So it's not easy, but overall, these people are pretty good people and pretty sensible. And whilst they've got different views and they're at different stages of development, most of these guys see we need to act together for the common good. So it's quite interesting. Listen, I've only been to a couple of meetings. Fran's attended for us, Steve's attended on another occasion, so I'm by far an expert, but so far, yes.
Do you have any views on on structural issues? For instance, one I love to talk about all the time is the salary cap and how that can help make the game as a whole more sustainable and ultimately profitable.
Absolutely, it's vital. It's vital to the game. Before I got involved, the majority of the owners wanted to try and keep pace with France, who spend an absolute fortune. So the salary cap, I believe, was higher than it should have been.
Yes,
probably higher than it should be now, and the it manifests that manifests itself in everybody losing a load of money. I think the English game probably will never be able to compete financially with Europe, and I don't think we need to try. I think we've got a great product in ourselves. Most of the guys. Money's important, but most of the guys want to play for England, and if you want to play for England, I think the RFU were right, you have to play in England, and that keeps our stars in, and we can then afford two or three well-being stars on big money to keep the glamour there. But yeah, it'd be great if we could have a worldwide or certainly a European wide salary cap. But I don't suspect that's going to happen.
That's a tough ask, isn't it?
It is.
It's a tough ask. There again, my views on salary cap are it makes the competition of the Premiership the best competition. Whereas you might get better players in France, but the competition is rubbish.
Yeah, but to protect the English game, so I don't know. Just to make it simple, let's say we said, right, you can only pay $200,000 to a player.
Yeah.
We'd lose 30 of our best UK players because they'd all go and earn $600,000, wouldn't they, playing for France? And let's face it, they might. If you could earn $200,000, but it was a great competition for the fans, or $600,000, and it wasn't such a great competition, you've got a responsibility to yourself and your family, you'd go, wouldn't you? And who can blame them?
Yeah, I mean that.
So that's why we have to consider handling Europe and France when we talk about salary caps.
You've also got this rather kind of double-edged sword, which is English rugby.
Yes.
So English rugby is brilliant for you, I suppose, because it basically tops up players' salaries and it's an incentive to stay in the UK. On the other hand, you're losing some of your most valuable assets at some of the most important times of the season.
Yeah, let's bear in mind the RFU have all of this money because we're providing the sport.
Yeah.
So without the Premiership, the RFU wouldn't exist because you couldn't have an England team without Premiership. So we are interdependent on each other. We get, for supplying players to England, we get paid. It's probably not worth, financially it's not worth it, but sport is also a passion and it's love, and we want our young lads playing for England. Historically I think they've not been looked at, or it's been perceived we've not been looked at well, but that has definitely changed. I think we had six or seven other guys, I know it was a Lions year, but we had six or seven of them there or thereabouts. And I think we're gonna form a strong part. I think we're form a stronger part of the under 20s and under 18s as anyone, because we've got a great academy, and I think that will continue, and that will also help us move up the league. So we've got to be fighting in the top four rather than fighting to stay in the Premiership.
Now, I've read as much stuff about you as I possibly can before coming here, and the phrase that keeps on coming up, if I'm saying, is deal maker. So, when did it dawn on you that owning sales an option, and then what steps did you take to kind of make this deal happen? How did you do it?
I know Brian Kennedy, who's been fantastic for sale. I think he owned it for 16 years, yeah. and he put his heart and soul into it, and not a considerable amount of money. And I think he left. He's been living in New York and the Bahamas for a while. So his enthusiasm had waned. He'd mentioned it once or twice over the years if he'd had a drink or whatever. I think Steve Diamond obviously knew Brian was interested in selling, so he'd always had it on his agenda. So it just, I suppose, came at the right time when the TV deal had been done and the money from the RFU and Premier Rugby was going up. Because to be fair, if the business was still losing £2-3 million a year before I'd have bought it, I wouldn't have bought it. I don't want to be funding that sort of lap. But the business had been run well, we had gone up. We could actually have a profitable club now.
Is that right?
Yeah, we could. So I think through good management, the club was maybe lost, I don't know, £1 million the year before we bought it. With all the new deals in place, we're probably getting £1.5 or £2 million a year more in central funding than we were. So if we'd have kept spending, so Steve was spending something like £4 million on the squad. If we keep spending that, we'd make money.
Yeah,
it'd be profitable. But we don't want to be. We don't want to be fighting to stay in the Premiership, do we? So we're. Go on, sorry.
Sorry, without giving away any of the state secrets then, what are you currently spending on the squad? More than £4 million, I assume.
Yeah, well, Well, put it this way: this season we're spending more on the squad than Sale have ever spent.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's comfortably more than 50% extra of what we were spending. And again, it's possible. I'm aware I could be falling into the same trap as, or Jed and I could be falling in the same trap as other owners, whereby we'll invest heavily for a few years in the hope that we can build our crowds and build our income. And we might fail at that, and we might just lose a load of money like a lot of the other people have. But I think if we can provide top class rugby, I think we can find 10 or 12,000 people to come to our games. As well, if we get everything else right, which we're working on. Also, you can never get everything right when you talk about fans. They're a passionate bunch, but at least the with rugby fans, they're usually pretty measured and pretty sensible and pretty intelligent as well, which I've not found surprising, but I've found enjoyable.
Well, I mean, the one thing you would say about Sale on a match day is the stands aren't always as full as you'd like, but the corporate side is absolutely bouncing.
Yeah, they've been really good at selling the corporate out, and that provides a backbone of income for us. But we can only sell so much corporate. Mm. The real sustainability for a club like Sale is filling the ground. So we have to mix and match. So, for instance, this year we're playing a few games at the beginning of the season on a Friday night, which the corporates prefer,
yep.
And a few games probably at the end of the season. I think overall we're playing 7 Friday night games, which, because we've got to look after corporates as well. And the other, I think there are 9 more games, including Anglo-Welsh in Europe, through the winter when the weather's worse, we'll be playing at weekends.
Mm.
Unless we might get the odd TV, might make us move the other one, but most of the time it'll be Saturdays and some Sunday games. And if we can get significantly more crowds, we will move more, and we'll have to find corporates who don't mind coming on a Saturday and Sunday. Yeah.
Now, the name Jed Mason has been mentioned a few times in this interview. For our wider rugby listenership, who is Jed?
So Jed's a friend of mine. I've known him for a few years. He's got a family business, a very successful family business, the Mawson Group. He got interested in rugby later than I did, but he got interested in rugby. The opportunity came up and he's jumped in. He's been a lifelong United fan. He's been heavily involved in United, but already, he might not thank me for saying this, already I think he's more pro-Sale. Well, definitely he's pro-Sale now. Yeah, he loves it. So he's come in as another investor with me, and it just takes away the bit of pain, and it allows us to invest to improve the squad together.
And are you two the only shareholders?
As long as we hit certain targets, then Steve Diamond and Mark Quato will both be shells of Sale.
That's a very interesting business
yeah,
model you've got
it
there.
It is. But I mean, I wouldn't have bought this club if it wasn't for Steve originally. I think I think what he's achieved over, and not only at Sale, wherever he's been, he's always done really well. But at Sale, he's had great achievement on a limited budget. I mean, I don't know if people realise, I think we were probably spending less than half of what a lot of teams were spending. And I don't know if you worked out, his average finishing position might be 7th or something,
yeah,
I don't know.
He's only finished outside the top 6 4 times, I believe.
Well, yeah, there you go, and that's spending hard. And let's face it, what you spend on the squad really matters in this game.
Yeah.
So I think he's done really well. I believe, given the budget, and I work with him, to be fair, sometimes probably not to his enjoyment, but I work with him on planning to build the squad and what we spend. And I think if he's as good with a bigger budget as he is with a smaller budget, it's not going to take him long to get us to compete in the top 4.
Completely agree. We've spoke already about bringing players in, and obviously that is important. You need that extra bit of star quality. But I think one of the things they've done remarkably well over the last few years is bringing in youngsters, and doing so without a particularly strong academy setup. It's more an Ivan's club than it's a system.
They've not had a bad. I don't think they've had a bad academy, have they? To be fair, though, you're right. I've judged how good our academy is historically on the number of players we produce, which, as you say, might be if we're better at it or somebody's got a better eye. I don't know, but we've heavily invested in the academy. I think we were rated number 2. In the country, and we will keep investing in the academy, because again, sustainability, if we can build the players and build them in our moat, it'll be better for us. And we sign them up now. There's a new rule since I've got involved, because as a fan, anybody who's a fan will know this, they're pretty sick and tired of creating, helping to create these players and losing them to what do the fans call it? The sale reserves or whatever it is. Yeah. So we won't be losing any more players. And it's this simple. If we're going to invest time and money to make you a player, and we do it better than most, because if you've been building in a load of stars, you have to play in them, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And the youngsters very rarely get a chance. So the fact that they get an opportunity and we help develop these players really helps them. We're not going to do that for 2 years and then you go somewhere else. You're signing long term, and we've put a system in place. We don't keep these players cheaply. If they succeed, they earn.
Yeah.
So we've got a good system in place. So the players do well out of it, and we get rewarded for bringing these players on.
And is that something you've changed since you've come on board?
Yes.
So just sell me your vision for the next 2 or 3 years of how things are going to be different in different sale.
Well, I think we've got a much stronger squad. The year I came in, I think we brought in June, so Steve had done most of the recruitment under the old regime, and I think it was 10 or 12 players in. There were a lot of players gone, and we brought a load of new players in. We've had the same this year, a lot of players gone, brought players in, but I think next year, I'm hoping it'll be 2 or 3, because stability and these guys working together over the long term is what's going to help. We've got a fantastic core of players. I mean, young players who've been with us for a while now, there's Will Addison and Ross Harrison, Mike Haley, Josh Beaumont, the players, Cam Rick, oh, Sam James. It's unbelievable number of quality. Jennings is looking fantastic. We've got a real good core of players, and we're now trying to add, previously we've added players in, and Steve's stood up on a budget. Now we're adding better quality players in, which I think the combination will be more than the sum of its parts, which is why I think they'll all end up playing for England, and we'll have our own troubles then in replacing them for half the year.
Well, yeah, that is a bad problem to have. Now, we did mention earlier your other business interests.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that there is a little bit more passion involved in running a sports team than there might be, for instance, plant hire company, yeah, or glass company.
I think you might be right about that. That is for sure. So yeah, this is a combination. Well, the deal I've done with Corpac and our funders is, if it works, fantastic. If it doesn't work, I'll end up taking it over, because I don't want the other shareholders to be paying for my passion or my folly. But yeah, it's absolutely, it's the least profitable business currently than anything we've ever been involved in, but it's certainly the most enjoyable, that's for sure. So yeah, I've definitely, I think it's fair to say I bought it as a fan rather than a...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Strategic wise business investment.
Excellent.